Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Coming at you this week from Russian Siberia. Although I guess that's redundant, there is only one Siberia, and that is Russian Siberia. Right now I am sitting in a hostel in Irkutsk, which is just about an hour's drive away from Lake Baikal, the largest lake in the world by volume. Of course, as you were growing up, if you're American, you probably learned that Lake Superior is the biggest lake, which indeed it is if you measure it in terms of surface area. But if you count the amount of water in the lake, Baikal is not just a little bit bigger, a lot bigger. So big, in fact, that it could swallow all of the Great Lakes combined. And some crazy amount of water is in it. Something like 15 or 20%, I forget exactly, of the world's unfrozen fresh water. I'm not quite sure if that counts rivers or not, but suffice to say that mile-deep, banana-shaped lake hidden out there in Siberia is quite big. And as usual, thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend about the show, and thanks for leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I plan to continue doing this show every week or so as Katie and I travel around Asia for the next, how long do we have? Maybe 10 more months until we head home. It's been a great time so far, and I hope the good times continue, but I'm going to talk about good and bad. Whatever happens, it's going to make it on this show. Where I last left you, we had just arrived in Krasnoyarsk after one of the longest train rides of our lives. I think it was 38 hours, and I had previously been really violently ill. Luckily, by that last train ride, I was feeling much better. My stomach and everything else was more intact. We got to Krasnoyarsk, and we're ready to take off for the Stolby Nature Reserve, which is the main attraction near town. On that first night, we met our first non-Russian traveler that we had met since Moscow, I think. We've been meeting a lot of Russians traveling around their own country, but very few foreign travelers are around here. And so, because not many people in Russia speak fluent English, Katie and I have mainly been just talking with each other. It's a pretty rare occasion where we meet a friend we can talk at a conversational pace with. And we met a guy named Daniel in Krasnoyarsk, went out for a really good dinner at a Georgian restaurant. He is traveling around Russia right now on his motorcycle, planning to head into China pretty soon. We wish him luck on that journey. The next day, we got up and went out to the Stolby Nature Reserve, which is a giant forested area very close to the city of Krasnoyarsk. Just hop on a couple of city buses and suddenly you're in the forest. It's really cool and convenient to have this park right there. Katie was saying it's the Devil's Lake. If you're from Wisconsin and you know this lake, the Devil's Lake of Krasnoyarsk, which I don't think they call it that, but that's what we were calling it. And as soon as we stepped off of the city bus to figure out how to get into this park, we were looking at our phones, trying to find the map, and this older couple from across the street said, hey, we'll show you where to go. They were in their 60s, and they were both from Russia, and we started walking with them, and they were quite fit. Actually, we were walking at a really brisk pace uphill, and they had no problem keeping up conversation with us. I was actually starting to slow down a little bit, going, guys, you have to walk this fast. They were locals and they liked to hike up to this park all the time and go climbing around on the stolbies. And we found out that stolby means pillar in Russian. And the park is full of rocky pillars that are really nice to look at, but also very much climbable. And the first question that anyone ever asks us as soon as they learn we're not Russian is, where are you from? So we told them the United States, and they said, oh, well, we have our daughter married an American guy, and they're living out in Philadelphia, and so we've been out to visit him, and we've seen quite a bit of your country. And so we just kept on walking and talking. These guys were really nice and welcoming people. They kept asking if we had a place to stay, and I mean, yes, we did. I'm sure they would have hosted us no problem. At some point, I don't know how, but some point politics came up, and before anything even remotely negative was said by any of us, the guy just said, hey, look, in this park, none of that stuff matters. All it is the forest and hiking and being in nature. And that's why we come here. And I didn't realize this until we had gotten into the park, but the entrance actually is quite a long hike. It's probably like 7 kilometers or something like that from the main road. It's on a road that you can drive up, but there was very little traffic on that day. So we basically just hiked as if it were a hiking trail. We got up to the visitor center of the park, and there was a little cafe, so we all grabbed a cup of coffee, sat down on a picnic bench, and eventually they headed off in one direction. They were going to do a little bit of climbing on these stolbies, but we had all of our camping gear with us, so first we had to figure out where the campground was, get all set up, and then we were going to go hiking. So we said goodbye to our new friends and hiked to a short distance to the campground. Now, this place looked really new. They had a lot of cabins that you could rent out and some wooden platforms for putting your tent on, which I guess was understandable because the ground seemed to be quite muddy, and I could see how that would get ruined really quickly with a lot of tents going on. But camping on a wooden, basically a deck, you can't put down stakes. So that was one little bit of a difficulty. Luckily, there wasn't much wind or my tent would have just blown away. But we got that all set up and we still had a couple hours of daylight left. So we headed out and did a bunch of hiking around the main part of the park. It was a really beautiful place. There were these large rocky pillars that we could climb up to the top of. Sometimes it was a little bit sketchy, nothing too serious in terms of difficulty, but a few of these pillars, clearly no one was even in the area, and so if we happened to fall, it would be bad news. But luckily we were very careful with it, got some great views of the park, climbed a more popular, easier to get down pillar right at the end of the day, and watched the sunset right behind the valley where we were camping in this giant forested area. It was crazy to think that there's a city of something like 1 million people right around the corner, because it felt like we were in the absolute middle of nowhere. Very few other people out even. And this, I guess this place was voted second best nature area in all of Russia recently. Lake Baikal, of course, was number one. We were heading there pretty soon, so we were excited to be hitting up numbers 1 and 2. I'll definitely throw up some photos of this on my website at some point, which is, of course, 1000daysbetween.com. Be sure to go there and check it out. And it got quite cold at night. It didn't drop below freezing or anything like that, but this is the beginning of September, and we were already a little bit chilly in the tent, and we plan to go into Japan pretty soon, and so we're going to be camping for the next couple of months quite frequently. At least that's our plan. We'll have to see if we have to change plans due to the weather. Hopefully we'll still be able to. Stay tuned for that. But the next day was quite nice. As soon as the sun came out, it was nice and warm once again. We went up to the visitor center because it was open at this point and checked it out. The lady there was quite helpful and friendly to us. She pointed out the actual names of all these pillars that we had been looking at. And so now we learned that one was called the Grandmother and the main one was the Grandfather. And there were the feathers that we were supposed to check out. So at that point, we went up to our campsite, packed everything, and hiked up to the main part of the trail again and saw all these features the way we were supposed to see them. This is one of the downsides of traveling without a guide or much of a plan. Sometimes you don't really learn about stuff until you've already seen it. Like, oh, what did I just look at? So we looked at everything once again, and now I could kind of see the Grandfather that was supposed to be the profile of a man's face. I remember this, I forget what it was called, some sort of man's face in New Hampshire that I think was quite popular until a couple of years ago when it collapsed, and now it looks like just a cliff. Well, this one still is intact, this man's face Grandfather rock formation. After that, we went up to the feathers, and sure enough, it looked like kind of a Native American headdress with feathers on top, if you used your imagination anyway. And then we started hiking out of the park. There were a few people this day. There was a Russian tour group checking out these rock formations, but we were a little surprised that there were so few people, given how popular this park is, even though I think it was a weekday still at this point. But to get out of the park, we decided that instead of hiking down that road again to the main road, we'd hike a trail which led to a ski lift. And this trail was quite long, a lot longer than I thought it would be. It took probably 3 hours to walk down the whole thing, but that was all right. It wasn't particularly difficult. And then we reached the ski lift and we got to ride down for free. I was a little bit surprised about that. Maybe you just have to pay to go up. I'm not quite sure. But in between the ski lift area and the main area, we saw almost no people once again. Once we got down to the bottom, we realized this is a whole like winter fun park. And of course, the reason they had a ski lift is because there's a ski hill there, which obviously is not running right now in September. But I was really surprised and maybe a little bit sad to see snow making machines hanging over the one run that they had every couple hundred feet. They had a big pole hanging over it, and you could tell this is where they're going to spray snow out. So they actually have to make their own snow, even in Siberia on the ski hills. What kind of world are we living in? Anyway, we got to the bottom, took a bus back into the city, and we're feeling really happy that we had seen the main piece of nature in this area. And incidentally, almost as soon as we got into the city, it started raining, which is pretty cool, actually, because almost any time we've been in a city in Russia, it's been raining, just rain, rain, rain. But as soon as we go hiking, it just stops and we have beautiful weather. So someone's looking out for us, I guess. I should say, though, that all this getting out and hiking and nature, this requires a fair amount of preparation, and then afterward a fair amount of work too. We have to make sure all of our gear gets aired out and dried so it doesn't get mold on it. We have to go buy our own food each time, and we're not starting from a city that we know. We're not starting from home, so we have to actually go find where the supermarket is and figure out how to navigate. We don't speak the language. That there's just a lot of stuff to think about. It's all worth it, of course, to get outside, but this doesn't really leave a lot of time left for exploring cities. So it's interesting. As I've traveled more and more, I've become less interested in going to museums and doing the normal city stuff. Katie and I went to one art museum in St. Petersburg, which was awesome. But that's probably all I'm going to be up for in all of Russia. It's really more about meeting the people and seeing the nature for me. And so, speaking of all this preparation we do whenever we get somewhere and going outside and coming back and cleaning, on top of that, we've been traveling quite quickly in Russia. Part of the reason for that is because of our visas. We had to buy all of our train tickets before we came to Russia, so we just kind of just guessed at how long we'd want to stay in each city. And on top of that, we just we only have 30 days on our visa, and we really want to ride all the way across Russia. And it's the biggest country on earth, so that just doesn't leave us much time in a lot of places. We usually just have a couple days here, a couple days there, and then we're off on another train, which was exactly what happened this time. We were, as soon as we got back from Stolby, we got everything packed and then headed out for our next train ride, and that one was to Irkutsk. We were feeling a little bit worn out from traveling so fast. I'm sure once we get to Mongolia, we'll take it easy a little bit, take a few days off. But for now, it's not really an option. The great news, though, is that these train rides are super relaxing. I forget exactly how long this train ride was, something like 20 hours, which compared to 38 is really nothing. We had a second class cabin again, which means we had our own room with four beds in it. And our whole entire car was practically empty. There was just a family next to us, and there was one guy on the other side of us, and that was about it. There were lots of empty beds, so we had quite a relaxing time just sitting around reading our books and looking outside, watching the scenery go by. The scenery kind of changed from forest to steppe, back to forest, past a lot of little villages that looked quite run down, and not really much in between. A lot of nothing is out there. And because we had the cabin to ourselves, we didn't get to meet anybody really on the train other than saying hi to some of the other guests. Of course, they were all Russian, so we couldn't really talk to them too much. None of them spoke English. But still, I will say riding the trains in Russia has been, for both of us, I think, one of the biggest highlights of our entire time here. We really just love it. I was joking around with Katie that next time we'll have to go in the other direction, but we'll have to go all the way from Vladivostok and all the way to Moscow in one trip. It'll be awesome. It'll be like 5 days on the train, and we won't have to worry about anything along the way. That'll be great. I'm not quite sure if she's up for that. And so after this long train journey, we finally arrived in Irkutsk, which is, like I said at the beginning, which is where we currently are. And this was meant to be one of the highlights of our time in Russia. Probably the part of Russia both of us were looking forward to the most was Lake Baikal. And here we were at long last. So we figured out that the bus station where we wanted to go was probably about a 30-minute walk from the train station. And we had been sitting on the train for a long time, so we decided to just walk it instead of taking the public transportation. At first, the city, as we went through it, looked pretty old, pretty run down, in a lot worse shape than the other Russian cities we had seen. But this city has some character to it. The buildings have these wooden shutters framing the windows, and they're all different artsy kind of styles. A lot of the buildings, because they're wood and because they're a couple centuries old at this point, they're rotting and falling apart, and some of the buildings are sinking into the ground. You can see how they're tilted, they're listing a little bit. I wouldn't want to live in one of those buildings, but just walking past it, it sure does give it a lot of character. There's also a lot of new office towers in the city too. It's not like completely old and run down. And there's a lot of these buildings that are being remodeled, so they look new, even though they're quite old. And then there's a lot of trolleys and trams going through the city, as well as buses, electric buses, regular buses. There's a lot of people. It's a really vibrant place. And you can tell we're at a crossroads right now. When we were in Yekaterinburg, everything still seemed pretty European to us, culturally and architecturally. Then when we got to Krasnoyarsk, I was expecting it to look a little bit more Asian in characteristics, but not so much. We saw some people who looked East Asian, but not too many. But here it's a mixture. Ethnically speaking, there's a lot of European-looking Russian people, kind of your classic, what you would think of as a Russian. walking around. But mixed with them, there's a lot of Central Asian people, a lot of Muslims, and lots of East Asian looking people as well. And this city is just a couple hours drive from the country of Mongolia. It's very close to China. And before we went to the bus station, we ended up passing the Tourism Information Center. So we stopped in for a chat, and the employee there was really, really helpful, super nice to us. Her dream is to go to the U.S., so when she learned we were American, she was ecstatic to meet us. She said she hadn't met an American in a couple of weeks, and before that, it had been a really long time. Just foreign tourism in general right now is very minimal. I think part of that is because it's September, and really the busy season around these parts is June, July, maybe a little bit in August. Now we're into the low season. But obviously political tensions have affected tourism. I mean, you can't really cover that up. It's evident everywhere. Still lots of Russian tourists, though, like I said before. This young woman at the Tourism Information Center was really helpful with us. We asked her about where can we go around here, and she pointed out a couple of places. The highlights are Olkhon Island and Listvyanka, which is a little town that's actually on the lake. The city of Irkutsk is on a river that connects to Lake Baikal, but it's still not quite on the lake yet, and we really were itching to go there to the lake. So we figured out from her how we can get a minibus to take us right to Listvyanka and right to the lake. So we headed up from there, caught a bus, and an hour later we were staring at the largest volume of fresh water on the entire planet. It's quite a sight. Now, you might think that it looks like the Great Lakes, like Lake Superior or Lake Michigan, and in some ways it does. It's a huge lake. You can tell it's not the ocean just from the pattern of the waves crashing in. The water is crystal clear. It's really, really clean water. But you can tell right away this is not the Midwest of the U.S. There are giant mountains in the distance, snow-capped peaks. Looks like the Rocky Mountains right next to a lake. On top of that, the lake is quite long, north to south, but it's only like 60 kilometers wide. So I think the whole way you can see the other side, at least when there's mountains, you definitely can. Which, obviously, if you've ever been to Lake Superior and just stared out into the vastness of it, or even Lake Michigan, or I'm sure some of the other Great Lakes, you can see all the way to the horizon and not see anything in the distance at those places. And so once we got to Listvyanka, the first thing we wanted to do was drop off our backpacks, get situated in a hostel. We had already reserved a room in this place that had a banya, which is a sauna in the Russian language. We're really looking forward to taking sauna. So we walked up this long hill to this hostel, and the gate was closed and locked, and all there was a message saying, please call this number. So they already made an assumption that any backpackers who are going there are going to have a Russian phone, which is pretty weird. Well, Katie happened to have her phone in working order, and she tried calling the number, but we were out of range because it was so far up on this hill. So now what? Well, we rang the bell, we knocked. I don't think anyone was there, which I think I'll talk about this in more detail in a future episode, but this is something that's changed a lot with travel, is reserving rooms. Back when I traveled in South America for 2.5 years, I never reserved a room in advance. It just, no one did. It just didn't exist. I mean, yeah, you could call the place on the phone and ask for a reservation if you happen to be going somewhere that you knew was really busy. But for the most part, people just showed up. And now everyone seems to reserve rooms in advance. But then sometimes you've got this reservation and you show up and there's nobody even there. And then what? Then they have your credit card and then they can still charge you. And then you have to beg for your money back. And I could go on and on. I don't like this system very much. Smartphones have definitely improved travel a lot in most ways, but This is one of those ways where I prefer the good old days, to be honest. Anyway, we headed back down the hill, tried calling this number that they had listed. All it was a Russian, a menu system in spoken Russian, and so we couldn't understand any of it. The phone didn't even ring. So we emailed them saying, well, where the hell are you guys? And eventually we got a response saying, well, sorry, no one was there. It's not like we showed up at 3 o'clock in the morning or anything. It was like 5 p.m. It was a Saturday. And we kind of wanted a place to sleep for the night. So we started looking around while we were waiting for them to email us back. Using the old-fashioned method of just walking down the road, eventually found a new place. So luckily, it's not that busy here, so there are plenty of rooms available. But we couldn't have that wonderful banya that we were looking forward to. And one of the highlights of Lake Baikal and of Listvianka especially is the fish. There's a fish called olmul that lives in the lake. It's probably the size of a trout, I would say, and it's supposed to be delicious. So we went into a restaurant and I ordered an olmul and Katie ordered a different type of fish. Now, the food came out, and the waiter brought it out, and he even said, Bon Appetit to us, which was a classy little touch. And I looked at it, and I was like, this is a cookie. This isn't a meal. It was the size of a cookie. It was like three bites. And I was like, really hungry. And we've gotten some small portions here and there when traveling in European countries. Okay, I get it. Like, American portion sizes are out of control. Got it. We eat too much. Understood. But this was ridiculous. It was barely even a snack, and it was the price of a full meal. And although it was quite delicious, the three or four bites that I did get. But one thing that I saw was the waiter was quite skinny. And I started to think, well, you know what? Waiters probably eat a lot of their food at the restaurant they work at. Why wouldn't they? This guy probably eats his meals there, and he probably thinks this is a full-size meal because that's probably all he eats. Look at how skinny he is. I think from now on, we've got to look for restaurants with fat waiters. The fatter, the better, because then you know you're going to get a lot of food with your meal. All right, so our meal complete. Well, we both were still quite hungry, so we had to go out and get a second meal. This one we opted for quantity over quality. We paid about one-third the price and got about three times more food, and finally we were both full. The next day, our main plan was to hike on the Great Baikal Trail, and this is a really cool project. It's done entirely by volunteers, and they're trying to build a hiking trail all the way around the entire lake. It's quite ambitious. I don't think they're very far along on this project yet, but I wish them all of the luck and support they can get. And luckily, the part of the trail near the town was actually completed, so we decided to go hiking on that. We wanted to get up early, which this entire time on the Trans-Siberian, we found it impossible to get up early, mainly because every time we take another train ride, we lose another hour or two of time. It's like daylight savings time is coming up or ending really soon in the United States. And it's almost like you have a daylight savings time every 3 days. And imagine, think about how you feel after that first night of daylight savings. You're like, oh man, I'm tired. I need another hour of sleep. Yeah, well, that's us pretty much every day. Again, I'm not really complaining. It's like, it's this slow moving jet lag versus just flying somewhere and getting it all over with. I'm not sure which is better, if it's better to rip that bandaid off right away or just take it off nice and slowly. That's what we're doing though, and it seems to be a constant dull pain, let's put it like that, where we're always sleeping until 9 o'clock in the morning because we just cannot get up early. Anyway, as soon as we stepped outside of our hostel, we smelled smoke. And no, it wasn't a building on fire. It was fish. This lady was standing next to the road, right on Lake Baikal, and she had a whole stack of these Olmul fish that had been gutted and were sitting out. Some of them were drying in the sun, and other ones she was smoking in her smoker. We both wanted to try the fish still, so we just got one, but it was like one third the price of my meal from last night, and we took it up the trail. We just had directions of which road to go on, and you just follow that road to the end, and then the trail begins. So we followed that road, or at least we thought we did, and once we got past all of the barking dogs and playing kids at the school and all the noise of the city, we were in the forest. We sat down and ate the fish. Oh, it was so delicious. When we had gone to the restaurant the previous night, I had gotten a pan-fried fish, which was really good, but smoked, it was just all that much better and much more meat. We decided we had to eat at least another one of these before we left town. So we continued on this road, and it eventually turned into more of an ATV path, heading through the forest uphill, and we kept climbing and climbing and climbing. And the trail branched off a few times, and there was no signage anywhere. And we're like, God, the trail is pretty nice, but why don't we see any signs? I thought these guys were spending a lot of time and effort putting this like Great Baikal Trail together. And then we looked a little bit more closely at the map and realized, whoops, we had chosen the wrong starting point. And anyone who knows me will know that I am really good at getting lost when I'm trying to go hiking. It happens all the time. I think maybe subconsciously that's what I want to happen, because once I get lost, then I can figure out how to get found, which is kind of fun. So we decided to cut through the forest and try to hook up with the real trail. I was pretty sure it was just beyond a set of hills. So we trudged our way down through the bush and eventually made it down to the bottom of this valley, where we found an actual, maybe a hiking path. And we followed that for a while, and then it led to another ATV trail. And we followed that for a good long time, and eventually we found the actual Lake Baikal Trail. And there was even a sign. As soon as we got on the trail, there was a sign. So now we knew we were definitely on it. We hiked up about 400 meters above the lake and got a great view of the lake from above, and then all the way back down the other side to the lake itself. And at that point, we were able to dip our feet into Lake Baikal. The water was really, really cold. We'll see if we get a chance to actually swim in the lake in the next few days. If so, it's going to be about a 3-second swim, because I was already starting to lose the feeling in my feet after about 30 seconds of standing in the water just up to my ankles. Anyway, then we turned around, hiked 400 meters up, 400 meters back down to the town. And at this point, we were quite hungry and parched, so we got some water. And then we found another one of these Olmul sales ladies and got a whole fish for each of us. And once again, what a delicious meal. If you ever come out here, you gotta try the fish. It's great. Now, this morning, we got up, packed everything, and grabbed a minibus back to Irkutsk. And this was supposed to be a really long travel day for us. We were going to go all the way up to Okhon Island and stay up there for a couple of days. And we're still trying to figure out the logistics of where we can stay. And I think we'll just end up camping there. But what happened was we got to the bus station in Irkutsk, and the lady selling tickets just indicated, no, there's no buses, but there's a minibus. Of course, she didn't speak any English. I wasn't really sure what she was saying, but I was pretty sure that we just couldn't go. We went back to the visitors information center, and there was a different employee there, but she, again, was really friendly, really helpful, spoke great English. She made some phone calls for us and figured out that, okay, indeed, the public buses were done. All right, but there still were a couple of these private buses, and we were hoping to catch the 3 o'clock p.m. bus. It was about 12:30 p.m., so we were a couple hours early. But it turned out that bus was already sold out. So now we couldn't go to the island today. It's probably about a 6-hour bus ride, so it's pretty far away, but it's the other big highlight of this part of Lake Baikal. We have a few more days left, but we had to make a decision. Do we go to some other town? Do we just stay here in Irkutsk for a few days? Or what do we do? And well, we decided we still want to go to the island. We're just going to leave in the morning. I thought I wouldn't even be able to record a podcast this week. I thought I was just going to put it off until next week. But at least I got a little bit of time to record this podcast today. And it also gave us some time to buy some food for the next few days. We went to the market here in Irkutsk, which is really awesome. There's tons of great fruits and vegetables here. One downside of Russia so far is that the fruit and vegetable selection has left a lot to be desired. A lot of the tomatoes that you find in supermarkets are full of mold and just look pretty awful. So we've been subsisting on just meat and cheese sandwiches basically every day for lunch and eating a lot of kebabs, which it's all good. That is delicious food, but it gets old after a while. And so today we were delighted to see all kinds of great fresh food for sale. And once again, the city is this interesting mixture of different people. It's kind of, we're at a crossroads right now. And we are able to book the bus for tomorrow morning. So we're gonna head out, head up to the island for a while, then head back down. Then our time in Russia is gonna be wrapping up. So this is the last time I'm gonna be talking at you from Russia. I'm sorry I don't have any guests on. I haven't had a guest on in a couple of weeks. It's honestly, it's not that I'm meeting a lot of people and they're just not wanting to come talk to me. It's like, we've only met Daniel, the Swiss guy, who we met a week ago. And tonight at the hostel, there's a couple of guys who are, one is Korean and one is Chinese. And that's it for non-Russians. And the two at the hostel, their English level is very minimal. So I think once we leave Russia, we'll start meeting more people. And I want to keep this podcast going with guests, which is what I used to have all the time. But hey, if I'm just going to do a little trip update, at least I hope you find that at least somewhat interesting. Thanks for sticking with me, folks. And once again, signing off from Irkutsk in Russian Siberia. I'll talk to you next week when I'll be in, hopefully, Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia.